Time to get the local view. Busy few days. Football practice has started. Find his work on the cover of the Register Guard sports section. Keep up online, registerguard.com. Follow on Twitter at Austin Meek RG. Austin, how are you today?
Hey, Steve, I'm good. Just trying to stay cool like everybody else.
Yeah, we've been hiding in here. We didn't. These guys had to go outside. I was hiding under the desk. Seems interesting. A topic gaining traction with each passing day as more data becomes available. Long-term dangers of playing tackle football. Had the recent study in the New York Times. Let's start here. And I've asked a couple of people this over the last week. You're a dad. You have a son. Fast forward, say, 6 years, the issue comes up. What say you and your wife about the possibility he plays football?
Well, that's a really good question. It's a question that I think all parents of kids who are interested in football should be thinking about. My son is 2.5, so in 6 years he would be 8. And I think my answer at that time would be, you're not playing tackle football when you're 8. At this point, I don't know that I would say never. I wouldn't rule it out. I wouldn't say that my son is never going to play tackle football. But if he was really interested in it and he really wanted to play it, I would not want him to play until he got older. You know, I think there's some data and some research out there that deals specifically with the consequences of head trauma for kids. And the younger you are, the more potentially damaging it can be. So for my son, I would not want him to play definitely before he got into middle school and maybe even before he got into high school if he was interested in it.
Now, that seems like a logical, common answer. You wrote in Sunday's paper, the piece was centered on two people, a woman named Ann Skeet. I thought everything was incredibly poignant for those who missed. In essence, what is her story, her job, and maybe her dilemma on this subject and, you know, how she plans to handle it?
Well, for a little background on this, I am like a lot of people who have begun to feel morally conflicted about watching football. And even though it's my job and I watch a ton of it and I'd watch it even if it wasn't my job, there's still a part of me that does feel conflicted about it and says, should I be watching this? Should I be promoting this? And that's that's an ethical conflict that I felt for a while. And so the premise of that column was I called a couple people who are experts in ethics to get their perspective on this. And one of them, her name was Ann Skeet, as you said, and she is part of the leadership ethics program at Santa Clara University, studies business ethics, and obviously a very smart person and who has done a lot of research on this. But the most compelling thing that she said was when she talked about her own son.
Right.
And her son, I believe, is 11, and says he's a good player, but she saw that study and decided that's it. She said, I've been trying to rationalize this and tell myself it'd be okay, but I saw that study and I just said that's it. I don't want him to play football.
Yeah, it was kind of cut and dry in how she turned on a dime. Really, really interesting. Talk with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. Again, this piece in the Sunday paper about people just dealing with harsh realities about what's our national passion, football. Another football fan who you talked to, Sean Klein, teaches at Arizona State. So I guess, what does he teach and what was his angle regarding kids, I guess, making the choice to play? And again, it seemed to come back to his son.
Yeah, so he was the other ethics expert that I talked to, and he deals with a little different side of it. He's more of the philosophical side, you know, going back to Plato and Aristotle, and you can quote some deep philosophical ideas that might pertain to football. And for him, you know, it's something that he's wrestled with, and he has come down on the side of continuing to watch football, and he feels some of the same conflict, but his ultimate answer to it was, if you believe that players have the free will and the autonomy to make the choice about whether to play, then as fans, you shouldn't feel morally obligated to walk away from the game. And I think that's true. I think that's how I feel about it. And it's not to say that if you feel strongly that you shouldn't walk away. If you have strong personal convictions that football is immoral or that what's happening on the field is wrong, then, yeah, by all means, walk away from it. But I don't think we have enough information yet to say that everybody is universally morally obligated to do that. I think there's also sort of a common sense approach to say, if you love football but you're concerned about it, then push for the game to be safer. Hold the people in charge of the game accountable for the promises they make. Push for better equipment and talk about it. Be vigilant about it. Don't just ignore it. I think that's the worst thing that all of us could do is say, well, I love football too much. I'm not going to think about this because it ruins the enjoyment of it for me. I think all of us, even if we love football, even if we're concerned about it, the best thing we can do and maybe the most practical thing to do is to push for it to be safer and to talk about it openly and to be honest about the risks of it.
Folks, you could go to Austin's Twitter feed at AustinMeekRG or archive at registerguard.com. Check it out. It was in Sunday's paper. I found it fascinating. And naturally, let's move to football. Ducks practicing for 2017. When I think about Coach Taggart, I got some one-on-one time with him for the first time, and it's the you never get a first chance to make a second chance to make a first impression. So This is a guy who was a high-level player. To me, your thoughts on this? He doesn't have that kind of jockocracy feel to him. He seems to be passionate about everything he does, not just football talk. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. He is not one of those coaches who speaks in a lot of football jargon. Some coaches, they get up there and it's all about pad level and leverage and gap control and your eyes are sort of glazing over, falling asleep out there. That's not Willie Taggart. It's not his style. Now, he certainly employs some of the same rhetorical devices that a lot of coaches do. He's got his little catchphrases and his catchy sayings, but he's much more about attitude, about enthusiasm. We still don't really know a lot about what his football philosophy is because he doesn't really talk a lot in pure football terms. He talks a lot more about just how he wants his guys to think and prepare. So we'll find that out. But it is interesting to sort of try to get a read on him, and I get the sense that he doesn't really think football is that complicated. He's not one of those guys who thinks he's sort of the anti-Chip Kelly, I guess, in that way, because Chip was all about a system and a philosophy and a way of playing that was going to give Oregon an advantage over the opponent, whereas with Willie it seems a lot more like he's saying, we all do the same stuff. All coaches run the same plays, run variations of the same offenses. It's just a matter of who does it best, who's bigger, faster, stronger, who executes it the best. That seems to be much more his philosophy as opposed to trying to outthink the other team.
Yeah, I kind of find him the anti-Saban and Belichick, who sometimes you talk or hear them talk, and it's like you do understand you're not about to cure all disease and world hunger. It seems he revels in the fact he gets to do this.
Yeah, well, I put in the column, I asked him basically, what is your philosophy? What's your offense going to look like? And the first thing he said is, it's going to be fun.
Right.
Now, imagine Nick Saban going up to the podium on the first day of fall camp at Alabama and saying, you know what, guys? We're going to be fun this year. You never would hear that. So that right there tells you that Willie is a little bit different than a lot of his peers.
I know it's been kind of a common narrative, and we heard it at Pac-12 Media Days. But if you look around the country, the Big 12 is usually loaded. They have questions. In the Big 10, you got JT Barrett at Ohio State, Trace McSorley at Penn State. But, man, I know it seems almost cliche, but, man, this year, the Pac-12 really looks like the conference of quarterbacks as much as ever.
Yeah, I mean, historically, that's been the Pac-12's place. They've had great quarterbacks, but I think it's maybe more more glaring this year just because you look around the other conferences and they don't have a lot of great quarterbacks. The SEC certainly does not. The ACC lost a bunch of good quarterbacks. And of course, they got the Heisman Trophy winner back, but they lost to Deshaun Watson. And the guys at the top of the Pac-12, Sam Darnold, Luke Falk, Jake Browning, that's really where it starts with the Pac-12 is the quarterback play. And I'm not ready to say the Pac-12 is going to be the best conference in college football this year. It's not a limb that I want to walk out on at this point. But I do think if we end up looking at the Pac-12 as being one of the best, and if the Pac-12 does get a team in the playoff and maybe even win a national championship, it'll be, I think, because of the quarterback play. I think that's where it'll start. I think there are legitimately three or four teams in the Pac-12 who could get to the playoff because of their quarterbacks.
One other thing as we continue, a couple final thoughts for Austin Meek. So we have Mike Bellotti working with ESPN, Chip Kelly working with ESPN College and Pro, and now it looks like the guy who came in behind those two, Coach Helf, will join Fox Sports. Super smart guy. He had success as a coach. What do you think of him jumping behind the microphone?
Well, this will be really interesting. I'm curious what kind of games he'll be on, because it sounds like from the reports that he will be in the booth as a color commentator. So will they put him on some Pac-12 games? That could be really interesting. And I'm curious to see how he does with it. As a coach, you know, he was not necessarily the guy who would stand up there and give you a real punchy one-liner.
Yeah.
You know, not like Willie Taggart in that way. He was very analytical, but communicating his thoughts, sometimes they wandered a little bit. You know, it usually took him maybe a couple sentences to sort of get around to what he was saying. So I'm curious how that'll translate in the booth. I'm sure that, you know, they'll coach him up. He's such a smart guy that I think he'll pick it up well. And I'm not surprised to see him doing this. You know, it became pretty clear that he wasn't going to coach this year. And there's basically two options for guys who get fired. Either you get another coaching job or you go into the media. And so it's probably a temporary stop for him, but a good way for him to stay involved in the game and travel around and interact with some different coaches and sort of keep his toe in the water until he gets another job. And I'm curious to see how he does with it.
Yeah, I'm really curious. First of all, I always welcome a more cerebral approach because, you know, not that there's anything wrong with it, but we get a lot of jocks providing analysis. Let's wrap with this, a little preview. If you go back to spring 2016, then freshman Dylan Mitchell put on a show. Looked like he might make a big impact immediately. Then last year, well, he wasn't healthy. Missed half the season at two catches. I guess you spoke with him, so without giving it all away, how's he feeling? And maybe you told me he might have had some thoughts on Darren Carrington leaving.
Yeah, he's in a really interesting position because, you know, with Darren Carrington being gone, there's a lot of pressure on Dylan Mitchell. I think he's one of the most important guys on the team now because that receiving group is so thin, and he's one of the guys you can point to as at least having the physical tools to replace what Darren Carrington could do on the field. And it was interesting talking to him because he didn't do interviews in the spring, and not a lot of us had really talked to him before, but he actually was a really, really engaging kid, had some pretty interesting thoughts about, you know, just dealing with the injury last year, losing confidence, you know, the process of deciding to stay or go at Oregon after the coaching staff got let go. And he said he started meditating. He read this book that Tom Brady apparently swears by, kind of a motivational book. And at one point he compared himself to Conor McGregor. So obviously a lot going on in that interview, as you can tell.
Yeah, look forward to that as well. Hey, Austin, great stuff as always. When you're going out there to practice, try to stay cool and sane. Registerguard.com at Austin Meek RG on Twitter. Always a pleasure. Appreciate you getting us started on a Tuesday, my friend. Have a good one.
Okay, I'll be sure to hydrate, and you do the same. I know it's 72 degrees in the studio. Sometimes it's easy to get a little parched in there when you're talking all day, so make sure you drink your water.
Yeah, we will. Thanks for the advice, Dad.
All right.
Take it easy, Austin.